Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the SOM TV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. Well, the day is finally here. I am extraordinarily excited to tell all of you that Cup of Salvation, the fourth SOM movie, is streaming this Friday, depending on when you're listening. Friday the 23rd of February, it is streaming on SOMTV.com. So if you're not a SOM TV member, become one. There's hours of additional content, plus the film, plus lots of things coming around the movie, and you want to watch this. This is to say this took us years is an understatement. Most dangerous movie we've ever made, something we're very proud of. So go to SOMTV.com to watch Cup of Salvation on the 23rd of February. On today's podcast, I'm going to speak with John Adams, winemaker at Wild Sound Wine, and the sound designer and sound mixer for everything on SOM TV, also the films, Cup of Salvation. He is going to talk to me about grafting. Grafting is a very strange and, John, would you say magical process?
I would. It's magical, yeah.
Grafting as a concept is one of these things that goes back to the naissance of civilization. Kind of like when we put roots in the ground and we built houses and we built towns, grafting is one of those things that made it possible. And that is conjoining two plants together so that the plant you want can grow in a place that it might not want to grow in. And so the interesting thing with grafting is it matters tremendously to wine. It matters tremendously to, you know, most of the fruit we eat, all of these things, but to wine specifically, wine grapes. And so, John, why are we having a conversation about grafting? Why is this worth talking about? Aside from the fact that this generally is a great pickup line, it'll get you laid. talking
very
about
exciting
grafting.
Stuff. No, I think we talk about it with grapevines because grafting has such a huge effect on the outcome of a wine. It has a huge effect on the vineyard itself. You can use rootstock and grafting to control vigor when your vines are ripening, the varieties and the clones that you plant in your vineyard. It's great. You can do all kinds of cool stuff.
I have a little bit of a tiny background in biology and botany and these things prior to making documentaries. I couldn't believe just the process of taking two plants, putting them together, and it actually working. And when you dig into the history of this thing, this goes back thousands and thousands of years where people were trying to figure out how to conjoin two plants because one type, let's call it, you know, it's often olive trees or some fruit tree or something like that going back thousands of years. One would grow in a good place that was a nice place to live, had water, had what people needed, but it didn't have enough fruit or didn't have enough seeds or didn't have enough of what they wanted. So they would hack part of that plant off, they would make a cut, and then they would put it together. And I know that in the Bible, they're talking about olives. And olives being something that people were the first to graft together, same species, but two different kinds of olives together. And then it allowed people to have food and be in one single place. So from a historical standpoint, this changed humanity forever. So John, you had to do grafting of your own recently.
Yeah.
This is an intimidating process, honestly.
And I got into it because I just wanted to sort of explore and see the process for myself. You know, I'm not a geneticist. I don't have a lot of like biology background, but I'm a curious person and I just wanted to figure out how it worked. So I had some gamay cuttings that a few years ago, I couldn't find gamay in nurseries to buy because sometimes there just isn't a lot of stock. So I decided, well, I'm going to take this gamay budwood and graft it myself as an experiment to see how this really works firsthand. And it really does work. It's pretty amazing.
I know that this is a big conversation. Phylloxera, things are big words for history and for wine, and all of these, you know, could be their own podcasts and have. We've done a podcast on phylloxera. But what is the point in grafting? Why can't you just plant Cabernet or Merlot or Gamay in your case right into the ground?
Well, you can. And a lot of people do. There's nothing wrong with that. Some people would argue against that. But I would say that most new vineyards are planted on grafted rootstock. And the reason we do that is, A, what you just talked about with phylloxera and other nematode resistance, but also because you can do a lot of cool stuff with the vine itself. So like, for example, I can plant my vineyard on a particular rootstock that will be more drought resistant, or let's say I have a lot of acidity in my soil, or I need to speed up ripening because my vineyard isn't a cold place. I can do all this stuff. The rootstock influences the budwood variety that is grafted onto.
And from an influence standpoint, are we talking about like taste? Like it'll actually change the taste of the wine? Because I know that like for sommelier geeks, pre-phylloxera, ungrafted stuff is really fascinating. People want to try what does this taste like from before people had to graft.
Absolutely. It definitely influences the flavor of the resulting wine because it's changing so many of the aspects of growth for the vine. So, you know, if your grafted rootstock ripens your fruit a week or a week and a half earlier than the ungrafted stuff, sure, it's going to have different characteristics. The nutrient requirements for a particular rootstock are different from one to the other. So, you know, it does have a big influence on how the wines taste. And some producers will have, they'll make an own rooted wine. And you can compare that wine to vines that are grafted and see what the differences are, which is pretty cool. Obviously, it's different in every scenario, but I would say yes, definitely different effect.
When it comes down to this decision, it's a huge one. I mean, if you're gonna graft your Chardonnay to a particular rootstock, that is it's like marrying somebody. That's like a nearly lifelong decision for a winemaker.
No divorce. I mean,
no divorce. If you get that wrong, well, I should ask, can I change my mind 20 years in? Can I take, you know, a fully formed vine and chop it off and put new rootstock underneath it?
Technically, no, because the rootstock is what's in the ground. You could change the variety on top of that rootstock. So you could field graft, for example, Chardonnay over to Pinot Noir if you wanted to. But you can't just take that rootstock and turn it into something else. You'd have to plant all over again. So it really is like you got to commit to this. It's a big deal.
I mean, this is terrifying to me. And I know we've talked about your story, you and your wife's story on this podcast before. And winemaking is hard. It's brutal. And that was part of what our topic was about how much of a bitch it is to make wine and plant your own vineyard and do it all yourself. And that would be a crushing defeat. But what could go wrong? I just want to take one step back and talk really quickly about phylloxera, kind of like why this whole thing happened for grapes, for wine grapes, at least. We have spoken about phylloxera. We have episodes on SOM TV about it. It is, and this is no hyperbole, it is the atomic bomb that happened to the wine business in the 1800s in France. And it continues to this moment in certain regions. In fact, you know, no spoilers that Cup of Salvation has to do with Armenia. And Armenia has been so isolated and so historic, it does not have phylloxera. But now they are dealing with, you know, the Western world and other parts coming in and bringing some industry and doing things. And now they are dealing with phylloxera for the very first time. And so this particular thing, it's a small, is it a root louse, right? Is that what we would call this? Am I correct?
It is a root louse.
And it attacks essentially the roots and kills the vine.
Feeds on the roots, yeah.
Feeds on the roots. And it changed the entire world of French wine. We went from hundreds and hundreds, in some cases, maybe 1,000 years of tradition in France, in Spain, in Italy, and it was wiped out. But not immediately. This took, you know, a decade, 5 years, 3 years, depending on where it was and how it happened. And they were just caught completely with their pants down. Phylloxera created entire regions. Rioja was a place they grew wine, but it was not Rioja. And then Rioja became a place that had to supply all of Bordeaux with all of their wine. They had no red wine. I mean, imagine Bordeaux completely out of wine. And that's what phylloxera did. It destroyed everything. And so why did phylloxera happen, John?
Phylloxera happened due to international trade. They were fine for so long. And then what, in the 1880s, you know, it just happened because they're importing plant material into Europe from North America. And North America just happens to have this phylloxera bug that then infiltrated all of Europe and then spread across the whole world.
It goes to show, like, you know, any invasive species, not to get too geeky about animals, but, you know, when ships go into port and they take water into their holds and they suck up some mussel or some small bivalve or something like that, and they release it wherever they go, it changes the entire ecosystem. So in the 1800s, for them to bring this root louse in the dirt, it destroyed the entire, I mean, it was an ecosystem and it's gone.
Yeah. They had no protection.
No protection. But these American rootstocks, these Native American, totally different species, but they have evolved to be resistant to phylloxera. And so some very smart people decided, let's give this a shot, try to throw a Hail Mary at saving our entire wine industry. And they did that. But in the process of doing this, this is the thing that fascinates me the most, is this R&D of figuring out what each rootstock does. I mean, so if we look at the different ones, are they from, they're all from North America, correct?
Yeah, they're all from North America. But the cool thing is they're all from different parts of North America. So these things evolved in different environments, which is why they have different characteristics. So like Vitis riparia, for example, there's a lot of riparia-based native rootstocks that we graft onto these days. And those rootstocks evolved in areas with riverbanks. They like cool, naturally fertile, deep soils with a lot of water, right? Which that's what you would want to graft your vineyard onto if you lived in a place similar to that, right? Mm-hmm. And then you can compare that to something like, you know, there's another rootstock called Vitis berlandieri that is super vigorous. It climbs, has strong, deep roots, very drought tolerant. So you'd want to do something like that in, you know, a hot place like, or a warm place like Napa Valley or Paso Robles or something.
Interesting. Very, very, very interesting. From a taste standpoint, is it only how it influences the way and the time it ripens, or is it actually changing the flavor of the grape?
I would say yes, because of what I talked about earlier with like the nutrient demands of certain rootstocks mm-hmm. versus others.
Yeah, I think I remember when you were getting ready to do your grafting, and I remember you being not nervous. You're not a nervous guy. You're actually somebody who tests things and tries to figure it out. But I do remember you being kind of nervous, like this whole thing could go, you know, go.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't have a lot like financially invested in the matter, but
sure.
You know, it was still like you want to succeed. I was just trying something and, you know, it's good to see it work out.
So what's the process of going about this? Now, to explain like the whole budwood, you know, explain to me how you are doing this from moment one. And I will try not to get too excited because this is really exciting stuff.
It's very exciting. So once you select your rootstock decision based on all these factors that we've talked about before. So for example, we chose a rootstock called 10114, which is a very common rootstock. It's a riparia rupestris cross. So it's a native cross that has certain characteristics that work well for our particular area. Anyway, you have your rootstock and then you have your budwood. And how do we join these two things together? Right. So in this case, we're doing something called bench grafting, dormant bench grafting. So this all happens in the wintertime when the plants are asleep. There's no green foliage. There's a machine. It's a bench grafting machine. And it cuts what's called an omega graft into the budwood and the rootstock. And it's called an omega graft because it looks like the omega symbol. And it's basically just a tongue and groove cut that allows the plant to be connected without glue or anything, right? It just, one piece slides into the other. And if you're watching this on Tom TV, you'll probably see the footage of how tightly those two things connect together. The important thing is when you do the graft, you have to line up what's called the cambium layer. And if you don't do that, the plant does not produce something called callus, which is the next process we're going to go into. So it's important that you line up the correct size of the actual budwood with the rootstock and make sure that that cambium layer matches. Otherwise, the graft will not take. Do you have any questions so far?
No, I mean, this is, I'm pretty hot and bothered over here, John, to be frank.
Well, we're just getting to the good part here.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So once you have made that omega graft, right? So now you've joined your rootstock and your budwood scion together. So let's say I'm grafting gamay onto this rootstock. What happens next is the real magic. So these new grafts, they go into what's called a callusing box. And a callusing box is nothing more than a dark, warm, humid space that those vines go into for a period of 2 to 3 weeks. And they're stored in complete darkness, typically around like 80, 85 degrees Fahrenheit. And what you're doing is you're shocking the plant out of dormancy into its growth state, right? With the warm temperatures and the moisture. Once that happens, this is where the amazing shit goes down. It produces this stuff called callus, which callus is kind of like this, it's like a primordial ooze. It's like a wound, right? And they're undifferentiated mm-hmm. cells. And these cells can become root, they can become calloused, they can do anything, right? It's like a repair serum. And that takes place over the course of 2 or 3 weeks. And like magic, you come out on the other side of that, and that callus has formed and basically healed up that graft. So now that graft has vascular tissue between the scion and the rootstock. And that plant can, given the right conditions, it'll grow into a new vine. So once they come out of that callusing box, then you dip the graft in wax, and that's just so that they don't dry out, because now they're exposed to less humid air outside the callusing box. And, you know, at that point, new roots have grown at the base of the rootstock. So during callusing, you're not only healing that graft wound, but you're also growing new baby roots on the rootstock. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you can effectively plant those vines and slowly introduce them to sunlight, and they will grow.
I mean, it's an incredible thing. It's very... For the people who are interested in this, this is insanely interesting. I mean, it really is. It's almost like the island of Dr. Moreau, though. You know, it makes me wonder, like, what can you do? You know, like, can you how far can you take it? How come, John, I can't take grapes and put them on an apple tree?
Because they have to be the same species. You can't graft an animal's arm onto your arm right, and expect it to work
that's
out.
That's even more complex, yeah. I've often wanted a polar bear arm. I have wanted a polar bear arm for quite a while, but we'll have to wait till the technology's there. No, it's one of these things that I guarantee, if you go back to, you know, monks at a monastery or ancient Egypt or any of these, but they've tried it all. I promise you, they've tried to do, you know, every kind of plant you can imagine together, because they've seen success, whether it's like bananas or apples or something like that working. Then, you know, of course you're going to try to hook those two together. So it's a funny thing that, like, we look at this, that even the grapevine stuff, this is thousands of years of trial and error. Are you happy with your decision? You're on your first harvest, right?
Your first vintage. First vintage. So those vines that I grafted went in the ground 2 years ago, and they will now produce fruit this year, this coming vintage. Those original grafts I did, that was back in 2020. So this will be year 4, and they will be producing fruit this year.
Yeah, well, let's hope you're happy, because it's a lifelong decision there. <I know. laughs> Yeah. Do you see anything changing in the future with this technology? I mean, is this going to be, are we at the kind of apex of where it's going to go? I mean, is there anything left to discover?
I'm sure there's tons left to discover, but you know, I would leave that to the plant geneticists and biologists to figure that stuff out. But I will say that sometimes I think about, like, climate change and the future and what rootstock we have planted, right? Because will that rootstock that we have planted now be just as effective in 30 years, 50 years, future generations? The answer is probably not. I mean, there is a rootstock that would work just fine for just about any climate condition. But it's a matter of, do you have that particular rootstock planted? And the answer is probably no.
And also, whatever varietal you're trying to put on top of it, is that going to match up? I mean, you don't want a Tempranillo that ripens in 3 weeks. You know, it's like, it's just not going to work. I mean, the wine will not be good. This is also the magic of winemaking and all the decisions that go into that alchemy is... You know, I just don't think people consider this aspect very often. You know, it's not...
No, people don't think about it. And, you know, what's interesting, too, is that we forgot to mention that the reason we graft and propagate grapevines as opposed to planting them from seed, right? So, like, you ask yourself, well, if grapevines produce grapes, is a fruit, right? So they have seeds. You should be able to plant those seeds and get more grapes. But that's not how it works with grapevines. Technically, if you plant a grape seed and that new plant grows from seed, it is technically a new variety.
Yeah.
So the varieties that we grow today, so Chardonnay, Syrah, Pinot Noir, Grenache, whatever, those have been propagated over hundreds and hundreds of years for their desirable characteristics, right? Which I think is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, it really does tie back into the newest film, you know, Cup of Salvation, where you have these ancient plants. And to say that, you know, places like Georgia, Armenia, Turkey, those areas of the world, Iran, they have the oldest vines that exist. I mean, it's hard to argue that fact. But the reason they have the oldest vines is because people continued to do clippings, cuttings. You know, they continued to propagate, and they found one they liked. And they said, this is the one. This is what we want to grow. This is how it's going to happen. That happened in France, Italy, all these different places. But the ancient ones blow me away the most, because that's thousands of years people had to keep this tradition. The torch cannot go out. It has to keep burning and burning and burning forever. And sometimes you get lucky, you know, people stop making wine, but that vineyard over there, nobody tears it out. It stays alive for 100 years. I mean, it's a miracle when you have these ancient grapevines.
And it's interesting too, because those vines, even though they are identical genetically, because you're taking a copy, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can have over time genetic variation, right? And that's how we get clonal selections, right? So you could take genetically identical Chardonnay, plant an entire vineyard to that, and over the course of many years, there will be genetic mutations, and you will get different characteristics of those plants. So that's why, for example, we'll go to Chardonnay. You have certain Chardonnay clones that are susceptible to what's called hens and chicks, which means that the cluster has some berries are really tiny and some berries are huge. And
they ripen differently, right?
It's and they ripen like at different rates, right? So the tiny berries have a lot of acid, and the bigger berries get riper, so they have more sugar, which provides, you know, that's a unique
Zinfandel,
characteristic.
That's interesting. I mean, is it good for Chardonnay or no?
Yeah, for sure. A lot of people love that characteristic. But you can see how that creates big differences in the flavor and the quality of the wine.
Yeah. I mean, it's endlessly fascinating. But to wrap this up, I mean, it kind of shows all of the salt, the pepper, the hard work, all the different things that go into creating, you know, a bottle of wine. And we lose that. We lose the fact that this is a long, it's almost like a chef making a meal that takes 3 decades.
5,000 years.
For real. And, you know, it's a very different process than anything else we have. And that's why I love wine. You know, it's why this is why we talk about it every week on the pod. So I hope everyone, if you're still awake, there will be a test on this. And John, it's good to have you on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
And I hope that when people, go to visit, if you're not on the farming or the service side or something where you're familiar with grafting, hoping you visit a winery, you ask the winemaker or somebody about the rootstock. Because I can tell you, their eyes are going to light up and they're going to go, well, let me tell you why I picked the rootstock that this is grafted to. So
farmers love when you ask them about rootstock.
Farmers
you'll be their favorite.
Yeah, you really will be their favorite vineyard visitor guest of the day for sure. I want to remind everybody right now, depending on when you're listening to this, if it's after February 23rd, right now, Cup of Salvation is streaming on Somm TV with lots of bonus features. If you are listening before, you only have a couple days to wait. It is coming. We are very, very excited. So go to SommTV.com. And check out Cup of Salvation, the fourth Somm film, and I cannot wait to tell you the movies that are next. All right, everybody, please be safe. Talk soon. Drink something nice.